The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning. How are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement, and I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie or on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. What a glorious morning it is across the county, and well done to everyone who participated in the darkness into light. And what a beautiful morning it was to be out walking the roads. And last night, did you look up at the sky and see the colours? Because I was actually in Blanket Street. I was asleep. I must have been living under a rock the last few days. I didn't hear this thing was going to happen at all. The northern lights over our Kerry skies. My wife woke me up, and I didn't know what she was waking me up for. And out I went. She taught me about the stars and that there was something amazing happening. And knowing that I was into this kind of thing, I looked up and it was absolutely stunning. I've never seen anything like it. There was all these different kind of colours, like pinks and light greens, and it was absolutely stunning. And I know on the Radio Kerry Facebook page, I've looked there this morning, you're all sending in absolute wonderful photos, so keep those coming in, because I don't know, is it a once in a lifetime thing, but it doesn't happen too often around here. And we are in the Dark Sky Reserve in Kerry as well. There's three in the world, three gold tiers, two in the Northern Hemisphere, one in the Northern Hemisphere, two in the Southern Hemisphere, and we're lucky enough to be the one in the Northern Hemisphere. So it's an absolute privilege to live in this county and to be looking up at the stars at night. But it was a clear night last night, which really helped as well. This morning, I have a very busy programme lined up for you. And if you want to get in touch with us, 066-712-366. Siobhan's taking your calls. You can text the WhatsApp, 083-300-3300. On the programme this morning, we'll hear from the charities involved in this year's Ring of Kerry Cycle. And we'll hear another episode of the documentary series called Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture. And this is the final episode. We will be featuring Sandy Feed Farm, which is situated in a rural setting near the village of Camp, run by Eleanor Bowler and her family. And we'll also have our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom. We'll be talking about K-Fest and the Stall Writers Week, among other things as well. But I'm delighted to say we have a packed studio in here this morning, and I'm sure they'd like to be out enjoying the sun, but they'll get their chance. We have the various charities which we'll be going through, but we also have the man himself, Cathal Walsh, PRO of Ring of Kerry Cycle. Cathal, and all of you, you're all very welcome, and I'll introduce you as we go. Cathal, 40 years, is it? And you were involved from the very start.
Absolutely, Joe, something I'm very proud of, that we kept going. Good times, bad times, and it's a special year for us this year. As you said there, Joe, a few minutes ago, this is our Ruby anniversary we're having then, on the Saturday, the 6th of July. It's a traditional date for the cycle, and you were talking about looking at the stars last night. You're looking at the stars here in the studio this morning, because they're all wonderful charities that I could find a reason to cycle for each and every one of them if I was capable. And we're very proud and have worked closely with them over the last few months, and they've been very active in looking for cyclists who, first of all, registered in fundraise for their chosen charity, Joe.
Yeah. How much did you say you raised in that time?
We have 20 million now we've reached for charities over that time, and we had small beginnings. The first one was for the kidney unit here in the Tralee Hospital, and then we had aid cancer treatment. I'm very proud to be down in CUH one day when we had raised sufficient funds for the scanner down there in CUH in the early days alone, when we had one single charity. Now we have six tier ones and we have six tier two charities, and of course ourselves as Ring of Kerry Charity Cycle, we're a registered charity also.
You're a bright, intelligent man, so would say a visionary. Did you think that it would take off to where it went at the start? Was that the aim, or what was the thoughts in the beginning?
Like everything else, we had small beginnings, but we branched out and we started off with 36 cyclists. We went as high as 11,000 at one stage. stage. But a lot, we're not the only show in town now, Joe. Mm. There are lots of cycles, and I say they were born off the Ring of Kerry.
Yeah.
No matter where they were, but ours is unique, and that's a charity cycle run by volunteers.
Mm. And there's a lot of people that do it. They're all on their own particular journey as well. There's some great stories come out of it as well during
absolutely,
those years.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had several, some lovely stories of people who cycle for reasons where they lost someone belonged to them through cancer or whatever, and they had a vision that they'd like to cycle and fundraise for that, and have done very well as a result. And the charities, and many of them Kerry, but we have national charities as well that have benefited largely from the Ring of Kerry cycle. You cannot have a nicer scene than to cycle around the Ring of Kerry.
Mm.
It's a brand name known all over the world.
Yes, and then the people that actually help out on the day as well, you know, people giving of their time, it's kind of almost a tradition that they do that. There's, I know there's one farmer at the side of the road with his bulk tank, and he has the water in it, giving it out, you know.
A Garvey man,
yes,
from down there. I know him well, and I know his daughter is Claire out in St. Francis Special School.
Mm.
He's up at the top of Cumacista with the big tank.
Yeah,
but without volunteers, we couldn't run it. Would you believe we have 1,200 volunteers on the day?
Whoa.
And most of them are GA clubs around the Ring of Kerry, because they know their roads, they know the areas, they know where to have a flag and a whistle. And safety is paramount. Like, and the most dangerous place we find is that coming down from Miles Gap in the evening.
Yeah.
You can be doing 30, 40 miles an hour on the bike there, but we have that, we'll say, policed now because of the danger that people could.
Yeah, and people think they're home and hose kind of as well. Yeah.
And there's a bit of cycling to be done after coming down. You have to go up again, you know. It's not a free run from Muckross into Killarney, even.
Yeah, and one of the most scenic routes in the world, I'd say. Is that one of
absolutely
the most scenic charity cycles?
And the best way to see the Ring of Kerry is on a bike.
Yes, and that is true, though, yeah, because you're not whizzing by and you can take it in.
That's true, yeah.
And people help each other on the way as well.
Well, they do, when you meet people from all over. We get people from Canada, Australia, all over the world coming to cycle.
Mm. The charities, we're talking about St. Francis Special School, and we're going to be talking to Katie Shokra there, Brew Cullumbanis and Maria O'Connor, Focus Ireland, Niamh O'Riordan, Irish Cancer Society, Agnes Horn, Breakthrough Cancer Research, Owen O'Sullivan, and Councillor Mikey Shee, Comfort for Chemo Kerry. They're all the six main
ones. Yeah, I'll mention them later on.
Yeah, very good. Excellent.
Tier twos, yeah.
Yeah, well, we better get to the stars, as you mentioned. Brew Cullumbanis, I'm delighted to say we've Anne Maria O'Connor. Anne Marie, thanks a million for coming in. And tell us, what is Brew Cullumbanis, first of all, for people that might know?
Okay, so what Brew Cullumbanis is, we provide home-from-home accommodation to relatives of seriously ill patients in Cork hospitals and the hospice. So we have 26 bedrooms in Wilton, and we recently purchased an additional property that has 5 bedrooms. So in total, we can accommodate 31 families of relatives of seriously ill patients in Cork hospitals.
Yeah. And oftentimes, it's the families that are forgotten about, aren't they? You know?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're living outside of Cork City and you have a relative who's seriously unwell, I mean, where do you go? Where do you stay? Like, you don't end up sleeping in a car or sleeping on a mattress next to the bed. So we provide that service to families to allow them to be close to their relative.
Mm. Is it a challenge to get accommodation like that, you know, in the vicinity of the hospitals and things like that?
Well, I suppose we're very lucky that we have the purpose-built 26-bed facility, and then the other facility became available. It was an old B&B, a former B&B, not an old B&B, a former B&B. So we were lucky to be able to buy that, and it's 5 ensuite bedrooms, and it's 1 kilometre from the hospital, from door to door. It's 1 kilometre. There's a bus that can bring people. There's parking there in the new facility. Our existing premises is directly across from CUH, but families from all over, our families can stay with us from all the hospitals in Cork. So from the CUH, the Bonds, the Mercy, and the Hospice as well.
Mm. And how important is that as well, I suppose, for the families to kind of get out of the hospital and have that break as well, and then be able to have a base?
Exactly, just to have a base, to have somewhere to prepare a meal. In the accommodation there is as a kitchen so families can go across. Even a lot of the families would say when they walk across the road, it just gives them a bit of headspace that they can go back then and face whatever they have to face again when they go back to the hospital. So it just gives them headspace, really.
Yeah, and also I suppose when you talk about Kerry people as well using the facilities, you know, it's a home away from home then,
I'd imagine. Absolutely, yeah. So a third of the families that stay with us are from County Kerry, followed by County Cork, Waterford, Tipperary and Clare, and we also get families from Wexford as well. CUH is one of the main trauma hospitals in Europe, so it's expanding all the time. I mean, there's a new children's hospital going there. It's getting bigger and bigger, so the demand for our service is increasing all the time as well.
How is it funded, and how important is fundraising events like Ring of Kerry to Brew Colum Ellis?
Ring of Kerry is hugely important to us. We're a small independent charity. We rely totally on donations and fundraising initiatives to cover our running costs. We don't get any funding from the state at all, so we don't get any funding from the Department of Health or from the HSE, so it's hugely important to us.
How did you get involved in it yourself?
I suppose I've been working. The charity is open 20 years next year, and I've been with the charity 19 years.
Whoa.
So, yeah, I think I'm part of the furniture at this point.
Yeah.
But I absolutely adore it. It's like, some people would say it's a very sad place to work. Of course you have sad stories, but you also have inspirational stories as well. And I suppose they're the stories that we focus on as well, you know. And it's just being able to provide a support to families when they need it most is really important.
Cathal, I think it's the stories that really connect with people when you hear the actual stories of the charities. And like a lot of the people that work there in these organisations that we're talking about, it's almost a calling, isn't it?
Oh, it is, yeah. And a human interest story is a thing that'll sell your particular charity. Absolutely, it's brilliant.
Yeah. So I suppose you'd be encouraging people to get on there by Cree?
100%, yeah. We have great support so far, but we do need more support. We have a lady who's, and her partner who's cycling it on a tandem bike. So, and we have a family who stayed with us before. They stayed with us when their father passed away, and he's cycling in memory of his father. So, and we also have another family who stayed with us when their baby was born premature. So, like, everybody has a story, and that's the important thing. That, and we really would love as many people as possible to cycle for Brew.
Yeah, that's amazing, because like I said, often the families are kind of forgotten about, and you know, they're very much in this as well. And to have somewhere, you know, that's not sterile and a nice kind of homely place as well,
exactly,
which Brew Colum Ellis is.
And that's the one thing as well, that families get great support from each other. In the kitchen in the morning time, you see families chatting, and you'd have people who've become lifelong friends through their shared experiences as well.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a real legacy out of it as well, which is absolutely fantastic. If people want more information on Brew Colum Ellis, where would they go?
They go to our website, www.brewcolumbannis.com. We have a Facebook and Instagram account as well. And of course, pick up the phone and give us a call. We'd be delighted to chat with you as well.
Very good. Well, thanks, and Maria, for coming in and telling us all about it. We wish you the best of luck with Brew Colum Ellis and also with the fundraising efforts as well. We're going to take a break. We'll be meeting more of the charities after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime. You're listening to The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Yeah, and if you want to get in touch with us, 066-712-3666. Siobhan's taking your calls. You can text the WhatsApp 083-300-3300. And someone has texted us, "Hi Joe, please ask Cathal, can one take part in the cycle on the e-bike?" Ta, I haven't heard that since my grandmother used to say that. Thanks, Ta. An e-bike, can you take part in an e-bike?
No problem at all. And but to have a reserve battery, if you do a little check around the, maybe around Sneem, you might need to change the battery there. But be aware that you're not going to get around all the way with the one battery on the e-bike. But it is permitted. Like, I mean, we don't examine the bikes before they go.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with an e-bike now, but I presume you can kind of cycle the easy parts in, and would that save the battery a bit?
It would, yeah.
We might have it for Cumbacista then.
Oh, yeah. Geez, that's Cumbacista and Miles Gap, the two most important parts.
For the battery.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
There'll be a lot of people trying to fit batteries to their bikes, I'd say, trying to get them up those difficult parts. We're talking talking to all the charities involved in the Ring of Kerry charity cycle, the main beneficiary charities. Before the break, we were talking to Brew Cullumbanis, and now we're going to meet St. Francis Special School and Focus Ireland. And first for St. Francis Special School, we've Katie Shoker, who's a teacher there. Katie, you're very welcome. How are you this morning?
Morning, Joe. I'm great.
So tell us about St. Francis Special School.
St. Francis Special School is in Beaufort. We're very privileged to be part of the Ring of Kerry charity cycle to be chosen. It's a special school for children with intellectual disabilities from moderate to severe and profound. Some of the children have challenging behaviour, some have physical needs, and some may have life-limiting conditions. So they're absolutely amazing, every one of them. There's 61 in the school from 4 to 19 years of age, and there are 15 new pupils coming next year.
Whoa, it's a big school. Yeah. And are they coming from all over the county?
They're coming from all over the county and from Cork as well. So they're travelling long distances. Some children could be in the bus for an hour and a half in the mornings to get to school. So.
And is it regular school times, or do they stay?
We start at 9 and we finish at 2:40. So buses start collections from 7:30 in the morning. And then they arrive home, at the end of that journey in the evening. So, it's a long day for some of them, but they come in with a bright smile on their face every morning. They light up our day, and it's absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
I can see it in you. People can't see it at all, but your face is lighting up talking about it. So you're a teacher there, and tell us about kind of your role within the school.
Yeah, so I'm a special class teacher. I have boys and girls from 5 to 9 years old. There are 6 in my class. We're the Rowan class. It's a busy little class, but lots of fun. So I suppose there are 11 classes in the school. There's 15 new students coming next year, so there's expansion going on, and I suppose this is why it's so important for us to be part of the Ring of Kerry cycle, to be a charity, because there's so much fundraising needed. I think every child that comes into our school, starts at their own unique starting point, and, they may need special resources or special equipment, and everything that they need and everything we need in our school costs a bit more, when
it's a lot of individual needs then as well. And is the expansion, is that like a physical expansion or just more facilities?
Yes, so there's modular units after going on at the moment, so there'll be maybe three new classes, three new rooms that will be, and there'll be new classes going in. So
And to see building and all that at the moment, the costs involved is just astronomical. So I suppose, again, you're encouraging people to support you for that reason. And with families all over the county, there isn't probably anyone that hasn't been touched by St. Francis School as well.
Oh, absolutely not. I think when you see children and they're coming from so far, and they're coming from all over our county up to our school, there aren't a lot of facilities for children with special needs. So the school is a massive community. It's not just the school and the staff and the students, it's the families as well. Yeah. So, the support that they're there, that we're so privileged to be on this journey and to be teaching these children, and for them to be, gaining life skills in, developing independent skills, and it's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's a very rewarding kind of a job, I'd imagine, to be involved in.
Oh, it is, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And if people want more information on you, where would they go?
Well, we've been doing a bit of work on social media, so we're, some of the children, so there's been a video for Aoife and GC and Audrin's video came out last night, just to show people a little bit of tell the stories of the children in our school. Audrin actually learned to cycle this year, so that's amazing. That's an amazing skill that he's after. And so all the children are asking, people out there to cycle for them, to do the Ring of Kerry cycle for them.
Yeah.
So you can go onto our Facebook page, Instagram, and we have a website as well. So there's loads of information out there for anyone who wants to learn a bit more about our school.
Excellent. Where is it located?
It's in Beaufort, just outside Beaufort Village.
Okay, very good. That's St. Francis Special School. And Katie, thanks a million for coming on and telling us all about it. And from St. Francis Special School to Focus Ireland, Niamh O'Riordan. Niamh, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Joe.
So tell us about Focus Ireland.
So Focus Ireland is a national homelessness charity. We have services all over the country, including Cork and Kerry. And we support people who are either experiencing homelessness or who or who are at risk of homelessness, with kind of services like advice and information. We have accommodation as well. We actually opened 67 new houses in Castle Island a couple of weeks ago, so that was great. And we have kind of a special accommodation as well for young people who are maybe leaving foster care. And we have services in every county, so they're localised. So if you need kind of advice on you're finding it difficult to pay rent, you can go to your local Folks Ireland office and they'll give you the right numbers and the right people to contact.
I'd say never has homelessness been in the news as much as it has, and for good reason. It's not in a great place at the moment.
No, you're right, and the numbers are shocking. Like almost 14,000 people at the moment are homeless in Ireland, and that doesn't include people who are in people that are on rough sleeping or an emergency accommodation. These are people who are in temporary accommodation, kind of hostels, B&Bs, places like that. And this includes over 4,000 children as well. So if you think of kind of a hotel room with a family of five or six and babies learning to walk and crawl in a hotel room, it's a fairly sad state of affairs.
Over 4,000 children.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's stark numbers, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
And tell us then what ye do in Folks Ireland that you're doing to alleviate that again.
So 40% of our funds come from fundraising, and we rely on events like this charity cycle to raise funds to have our services, to keep our services going. Like, as you can imagine, becoming homeless is a very traumatic experience, and we have trained counsellors who will spend time with children and families in order to mitigate this trauma. And as I was saying, the education services that we have as well, this all costs money, and to have this specially trained staff in place, we rely on a lot of fundraising as well to keep these services going.
And I suppose that's kind of often underestimated, the traumatic side of it, because your house is your it's your castle, and you know it's your home. Mm-hmm. And if that's not there anymore, especially for young kids, it can be fairly traumatic and unsettling, and the rug is pulled out from under you.
Definitely, and result in a lot of different kind of maybe behavioural issues, or in school there might be trouble as well down the line because of this trauma. And then there might be kind of homelessness that we don't really think of either, like, you know, students going to different counties and they can't find accommodation. There may be couch surfing for weeks on end. That's also what we consider homelessness, because you don't have a place you call home. You don't have your own space. So that is another part of homelessness that we might not initially think of.
And where do people go for more information?
So again, like the others, we have a website, and we have our Facebook and Instagram. And if you are at a risk of homelessness or want to speak to anyone for help, we do have contact numbers on our website as well. So it is there that you go, and we'd love to have your support on the cycle as well.
So you'd be encouraging people to get on their bike for you as well?
Definitely, yeah. Perfect weather for training now, so we look forward to seeing a few of you on the 6th of July.
Yeah, and Cathal, we were remarking on that this morning, that there was, I met a few now with the Ring of Kerry singlets. They're already out training.
They are indeed, yeah. I've seen them myself, as I said already this morning on my way, but with National Bike Week and everything, it's a great excuse to get out on the bike and start training, because if you don't train, you're not going to enjoy the day.
Yeah, yeah. Although I think I told you before about a cousin of mine that did it with no training, but I think he couldn't sit down for about 2 weeks after it. There was a lot of Sudocream needed for the man.
Pat Spillane, the well-known Kerry footballer, he did it once, and no, Pat had bad knees. He says, never again.
Niamh O'Riordan, Folks Ireland, thanks a million for coming on and talking to us. We'll go to a break, and we'll be talking to more charities after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
That's what you're listening to, and I hope you're enjoying the programme this morning. 066-712-3666 for your calls. Siobhan is taking them. You can text or WhatsApp 083-300-3300. Hi Joe, congrats to your legend guest Cathal from one of his first sponsors, Martin Murphy. Yeah. That's nice to hear from all the way back so many years ago. 40 years. Is that 40 continuous years? Is that including the COVID years?
40th year of the cycle, but
actual cycle, so it's longer.
Oh, it is longer.
Yeah.
Martin was with Combined Fruits there.
Okay.
And, he always delivered the bananas. And the bananas are vital. And
the potassium.
Water and bananas are the two most vital things.
Yeah. It's one thing I can't eat is a banana, I can eat banana ice cream. All right, figure that one out. But
thanks to Martin there for thinking of that.
Yeah, and lots of people getting in touch to wish the charities well as well, and that they're doing fantastic work. And we echo those sentiments. Now let's talk to a few more of them. We're going to talk now to the Irish Cancer Society. Agnes Horn is a night nurse with the Irish Cancer Society. Agnes, if you just move in a bit to the microphone. So tell us about the Irish Cancer Society and your involvement there.
Good morning, Joe, and
morning.
Thank you for having us here, and thank you very much, Cathal, for including the night nursing service in your fundraising. I suppose it is an absolute pleasure and a privilege to be a night nurse with the Irish Cancer Society. The night nursing service started with the Irish Cancer Society in 2007 with 8 night nurses. Now there are 187 night nurses all over the country. 9 night nurses are based in Kerry, and through everybody's funding and donations and everything over the last number of years, I suppose 2023, 480 patients and their families benefited and availed of the night nursing service, which is marvellous. Throughout the country then, there was 6,800 patients and families that availed of the night nursing service. It is an amazing service, really. I suppose I know most of the night nurses throughout the country, and they absolutely adore their job. They look forward to going to the patient and their family every night. We provide symptom control and symptom management. We work very closely with the palliative care teams in Kerry, both North Kerry and South Kerry, based in Tralee and Killarney. They're a wonderful support. They would give us in the report of the patient and their symptoms in the evening before we would make phone contact, first of all, with the families and the patient, and then arrive to the house in at around 11 p.m. and we stay until 7 in the morning. And I suppose a wonderful addition now to the night nursing service over the last 2 years is the twilight service. If a patient is very symptomatic and their families might be distressed, you know, so there's a twilight service in added on. That would be between 6 p.m. until 11, and then the night nursing would take over from 11 until 7. I suppose then the other charities that benefit, you know, under the Irish Cancer Society are the, if a child has a diagnosis of cancer, 193 families availed of the fundraising service for children and their families last year, 2023. 22,000 people availed of the transport support mechanism, you know, that provides transport for patients attending their chemotherapy. And then 15,000 people availed of the counselling service. And it's all free. And I suppose just to mention that we receive 5% from the government towards funding, and then the rest, the 95% then, are from the absolute generosity, the overwhelming generosity of the people in this country.
Yeah, Agnes, you're a fantastic spokesperson for the Irish Cancer Society. But the night nursing, I often think, like, you know, they're almost like angels. You have to be kind of cut from a different cloth, I think, to do that job. What does it take to be a night nurse? Empathy or like?
Yeah, I think. Thank you for saying that, Joe. I think empathy, compassion. I think compassion is the huge thing, really. Compassion, a listening ear at all times, supporting the patient and their families at all times. And I suppose sometimes when we go in at 11 o'clock at night, we say to the patient and their families, you know, we do an assessment, first of all, of the patient in their symptom management, in how they are. We advise the families to go to bed and just avail of our being there that night and to just get a few hours rest. We always reassure the families then, you know, that we will we will contact them if there's any deterioration or any change in the patient, so that they can go into a deeper sleep, if at all possible. But I suppose, Joe, we get great support from the Irish Cancer Society. We've a wonderful night nursing manager, Sarah Burke McDonald, and then we have Una and Anna. They provide webinars for us on a monthly basis. We're kept very much up to date with recent, you know, changes that might be happening in evidence-based practice or whatever, you know. So we're constantly being updated educationally, and we are hugely supported by our team leaders and our night nursing manager. And again, it is just a pleasure and a privilege to be a night nurse.
Yeah, brilliant. And for more information, the Irish Cancer Society, you can visit their website, and Cathal will be out the Ring of Kerry website a few times as well, just to remind you. But if you Google Ring of Kerry Charity Cycle, it comes up straight away, and how to support there is all there. Agnes, well done. Thanks a million for telling your story. Comfort for Chemo Kerry, Councillor Mikey Sheehy. Tell us about this wonderful organisation. You've been on a few times, and I think it's just such a vital organisation in this county. Tell us about it.
Good morning, Joe, and thanks for having me on. First of all, I want to thank Cathal again for allowing us to be a part of this incredible journey. That is the Ring of Kerry Cycle 2024. I suppose it's a testament to the legacy of the organisation that it's lasted 40 years, and it's only going from strength to strength. And obviously, look, like ourselves in Comfort for Chemo Kerry, it's a volunteer led organisation, which isn't an easy thing to do and to sustain, to be honest, but it's a real testament, like I said, to the organisation. I want to wish them well going forward. I suppose I got involved with Comfort for Chemo Kerry in 2018. We're a relatively young charity in the overall scheme of things, but we're very ambitious. We have a very lofty ambition in terms of the provision of care for cancer patients in Kerry and in the southwest, to be honest. I suppose oncology care and cancer care started in University Hospital Kerry in the early 2000s. As far as I'm aware, it was a single nurse travelling around the hospital delivering chemotherapy drugs. Obviously, through medical advances in terms of more detections and through probably the more the fact that cancer has become more prevalent in society, the service has had to expand at a rapid pace, and unfortunately the site and the facilities in University Hospital Kerry haven't been able to keep up. So for example, when I received treatment in 2013, the ward was basically a room about the size of this, or not much bigger than we're inside now, and there was about 12 recliner chairs where patients would receive their chemotherapy infusions, supported by an incredible staff of oncology nurses and consultants on the grounds of University Hospital Kerry. Like I said, you were just discussing there about the night nurses, and I have to say, across the board, any individual that I've seen who's worked in that cancer oncology palliative space, it's an exceptional calling. And they really are. We're very lucky to have the staff that we have on board in University Hospital Kerry. So our ambition is that service, as it's expanding, is going to be met by a standalone, state-of-the-art unit on the grounds of University Hospital Kerry. Very ambitious, very lofty ambition, I suppose. Out front, as a charity, we're seen to be fundraising to fund a portion of that build, and to fund the portion that's going to add to the comfort for cancer patients, to support them in their journey, to support their families in their journey, and also to support the staff on site in delivering their service and those chemotherapy drugs to patients. But it's also about advocating on behalf of cancer patients in Tralee and in Kerry and in the southwest. And as cancer becomes more prevalent, like I said, outcomes are also becoming more positive, thankfully, with, you know, advances in medication and drugs and other therapies, and we just want to have those state-of-the-art modern advanced medicines and care present in Tralee and in Kerry, and we just want the best for cancer patients in Kerry. So that's what we're all about.
Yeah, and you've skin in the game, like you mentioned, your own story, and it's been well documented. So again, you're encouraging people to get behind this wonderful
charity. Absolutely, 100%. Look, it's such a positive positive day, like Cathal just alluded to and everyone else. It's such a positive day. There's great stories behind the event. There's a great camaraderie. The volunteers who get out and about, who help and support the people who are sore for a week or two after. You know, they're all like you said yourself, they've all skin in the game. So look, I just want to encourage everyone as much as they possibly can, right? To register, they can contact us www.comfortforchemokerry.com. We're across all social media platforms. Google us, reach out. We would just love to have as many cyclists as we possibly can. I suppose this has nearly become competitive.
No, this is not the Hunger Games already.
Yeah. But look, we're just calling on everyone who has, and look, there's many families that have been touched by cancer throughout Kerry in the southwest and nationally. And look, like I said, just try and get out and about. There's plenty of time for training. Get out and about. Support Cathal, all of his team, everyone in the Ring of Kerry charity cycle, but also support the likes of Comfort for Chemo and all the other charities inside here today.
Very good. If you'd an e-bike, you'd only need about 2 days of your training. So, Mikey Shea, thanks a million for speaking so well on behalf of Comfort for Chemo Kerry. We will be talking to our final charity after this break.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Yeah, now it's time to talk to the final charity involved in the main beneficiary charities in the Ring of Kerry charity cycle, which is, if you want to go on their website, ringofkerrycycle.ie. Now, Owen O'Sullivan has been on this programme before, and I always find it fascinating to talk to him. He's from Breakthrough Cancer Research. Owen, I suppose that's an important question to ask first. Mike, you mentioned it's more prevalent cancer. Is it like that it's being detected more, or is there more cancer around now? Because you often hear that anecdotally, people saying that.
Sure. Good morning, Joe, and thanks for having us in studio this morning. I suppose it's a mixture of everything. We're finding new and better ways to detect cancer at its earliest. We have screening programs that are picking people up at earlier stages, and even we're starting to make some of those screening programs available to patients in certain categories at earlier stages of life. And I suppose, the older we get, the more chance of developing cancer in our lifetime. And the statistics that would have been given in the past about the chances of developing cancer in your lifetime have increased. That it would now be as many as one in two of us will develop cancer in our lifetime. So I suppose what we're all about is about trying to bring together clinicians working in hospitals all over the country, together with researchers working in universities, to try and develop new and better ways to detect cancer at its earliest and then treat it more effectively once it's been diagnosed, and ultimately to try and save more lives. And look, we're hearing from other amazing charities here this morning, including the Knight Nursing Service and even Mikey sharing his own story. Ultimately, that's what we're trying to do. The survival rates for people diagnosed with cancer have improved incredibly in the last 50 years, from less than 50% in the case of, say, prostate and breast cancer, to now those two particular cancers would be now in an approximately 90% survival rate after 5 years. Whoa. Which is just a huge increase. But there are still many cancers that just haven't had the same successes and breakthroughs, and these are the cancers that we focus. 80% of our research investment goes on seven specific cancers, because these make up over 45% of the cancer-related deaths in Ireland every year. And so these specific cancers would be ovarian, lung, liver, stomach, brain, esophageal, and pancreatic cancer. And we know that we urgently need to make new improvements in how we detect it at its earliest, so that we can treat it more effectively than for those patients. So that's what Breakthrough does.
And where is the research now? What is the new thing you're working on? Because like before, you know, we heard about bacteria kind of research, and I know AI is being introduced now in early detection. So where is the research at now?
Yeah, well, I suppose we've been expanding the amount of research that we're funding throughout the island of Ireland over the last 12 years. To once Breakthrough was launched in the first place, we were funding 12 projects in three institutions, mainly in Munster. Whereas today we're supporting over 165 projects in 13 institutions across the island. And so that would be a very, very broad spectrum of different approaches. In the case of one of the projects you mentioned a minute ago in terms of bacteria, that would have been a project actually partially funded by the Ring of Kerry charity cycle previously, where there was looking at the rates of bacteria present in patient tumours and what effect that was having on treatment outcome. And that's led to a different project now, which is a part of a national consortium looking to develop more personalised approaches to medicine. So if you can, try and figure out different approaches as to what maybe is causing treatments to work or what is possibly challenging those treatments in the first place, you can make different changes to make things more personalised to the patient to make them more effective in the long run.
Mm. I know we're talking about the research here, but I suppose it is always important to remind people about early detection, isn't it? To get your NCT done every year or every few, 6 months or whatever, but to get checked all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, look, the successes of the likes of breast check and obviously we've a whole screening process for colorectal cancer. But look, ultimately, people should also be aware of changes in their own body, particularly if they've ongoing worries for longer than 3 weeks. It's a very broad thing to say, but if you're worried about something, if something has changed, then people should seek medical attention and not to feel, oh, look, I'll only be worrying somebody unnecessarily. If you feel in doubt at any stage, as you said, early detection is really vital in the case, and particularly these poor prognosis cancers, they can often be hard to detect, and the signs and symptoms can often be dismissed as other things. We just did the BEAT campaign just in the last couple of days. It's a national campaign to spread the signs and symptoms of ovarian cancer. And the BEAT acronym is just to help people recognise them: bloating, changes in eating habits, changes in toilet habits, loss of appetite, things like that. So it's just vital that people can seek medical attention at the earliest interventions. But if somebody is diagnosed with something, ultimately Breakthrough Cancer Research is there to try and always have something available for a patient. Like, look, we've had a lot of tools to treat patients over a number of years, whether it's surgery or chemotherapy or radiation therapy, but I suppose what we're now starting to see is more targeted therapies. We've got immunotherapies now that have really been improving in the last number of years, and even things like CAR-T, which is a new treatment that's been having great effect for certain types of blood cancer. And these types of new treatments, every treatment that's there started out in research. So nothing changes unless we invest in research, and that's what we're asking people to join the cycle on behalf of Breakthrough Cancer Research.
Excellent, well said. And if people want more information on you, Owen?
BreakthroughCancerResearch.ie, so we have our website there, and you can follow us on social media as well. We're on all the different social platforms.
Excellent, and we mentioned you're a Corkman as well. Yeah, we welcomed you. We're almost outnumbered with Cork people, we were after realising, but it's great to hear the amazing work that's going on. And Cathal, I think that's as important as well. The fundraising is vital, it's a vital cog in this, but it's the awareness of the stories of the people involved and the work that these fantastic charities do as well is so important as well.
That's for sure, and I'm deeply touched by the stories I've heard here this morning, because in fact I can identify with the night nurse. My own wife benefited from the night nurse and the twilight nurse, and I can identify with Mikey. She had been in that room as well for chemotherapy. I love St. Francis Special School. Focus Ireland is a pleasure to work with you, and Brookhullen Bennis and Cork. If I was a cyclist, I'd have great difficulty in picking who to cycle, because I'd put you all right up there in the top. But I'd like to mention that as well as the tier ones, we have tier two charities, yep. And they're outstanding as well, and they're working hard getting cyclists. Autism Assistance Dogs, the Irish Kidney Association, Kerry Stars, Recovery Haven, they're here in Tralee, mm-hmm. The Cancer Support House, and we have Southwest Counselling Centre, and they're all working hard getting cyclists as well. And I just like to point out with regard to the Irish Cancer Society, they have a special one in that they can cycle 170 kilometres my way wherever they are in the world, all over the country, as well as take part in the day. They can either cycle the ring on the day or else do 170 kilometres. You could do down your country now, Joe. Yourself and Mags could get on the tandem.
Yeah,
and
an e-tandem.
And do 170 kilometres. Take it a week, 4 weeks, or 2 months.
Yeah.
We'll allow that up to the end of July.
Very good.
And I would at this stage like to people to sign up, register, go down, visit our website, choose one, any one of those wonderful charities, and make this one, our Ruby year, a very special year for us. We've reached 20 million. We'd love to make that 21 million this year.
That's the job. Well, that is a very positive note to finish on. And if you want more information on all the charities and how to get involved, how to support, how to volunteer, or how to get on your bike for the Ring of Kerry Cycle, it's ringofkerrycycle.ie, and you can Google that as well. Cahill, you might give me a tour around it, and that'd be a way I'd do it. You look fit enough for it anyway. So I want to thank all the charities, all of you, for coming in. It was an absolute pleasure and a privilege hearing all your stories. So thanks a million for coming in, and for the work you do, not just for coming in this morning, but for the work you do in general. It's so vital to help people in this county and beyond as well, which I think is amazing.
And Joe, thanks to you also for facilitating this, as you've done in the past all over the years, and it's a wonderful support to us, Radio Kerry, Ring of Kerry, all one.
Brilliant, and an absolute privilege. Katie, before we go, Katie Show Crew, wanted to mention some special people.
I would just like to say well done to the boys and girls in St. Francis Special School for making their confirmation yesterday. Kavina and her sister Azra, Robert, Luke, Jacob, Corey and Johnny, they all did amazing yesterday in making their confirmation. It was a very special day.
Excellent. We'll give them a round of applause and ourselves a round of applause here. We'll go to the break and I'll join you again the next hour.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The Saturday Supplement with Joe McGill on Radio Kerry.
Now, so it's time for the final episode of our documentary series produced by Connie Broderick and I, called Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture, where we showcase women in agriculture across the county. And this time we're going to feature Sandyfeet Farm, which is situated in a rural setting near the village of Camp, run by Eleanor Bowler and her family. The farm has been in the family for more than 300 years and offers a warm, welcoming atmosphere where visitors can get a genuine taste of rural Irish life.
This documentary is a Císte Communications production, funded by Cumasúna Man with a television licence fee.
This is my mother-in-law's home place. My husband would have spent an awful lot of time here when he was younger, at weekends, and even when we came home from college, he'd always make a trip back here. His uncle then, who was living on the farm, he retired, I'd say about 9 years ago, and Roy took over, my husband took over. And one of the things that Roy remembers about being younger here is it being an active farm. So one of the first things we decided to do was to put animals on the farm, but as we all know, it's very hard to make a living out of farming in the country now. So a lot of the land here is a special area conservation, so you wouldn't be able to do an awful lot with it. It left us with about maybe 30 acres of usable land. And at the time, our own kids were very young and there was nothing for them to do between Tralee and Dingle, really, unless they were going into the water. There wasn't lots for young kids to do. And we came up with the idea of a pet farm.
Sandyfeet Farm is situated in a rural setting near the village of Camp, run by Eleanor Bowler and her family. Open throughout the year on school holidays, the farm has been in the family for more than 300 years and offers a warm, welcoming atmosphere where visitors can get a genuine taste of rural Irish life.
Hi, come on in. The building we're in at the minute is the cafe on the farm. This is built on the footprint of the original house on the farm. We just thought that it would be nice to keep as much of the old house as we could. Everything goes on in here. People come in through here, they're welcomed here, they're told where to go from here, they're in and out of here all day when they're here. It's the heart of the farm. So you can get your teas and coffees here, and we also serve food. So the food on the farm, when we're open, we do things like soup, sandwiches, salads, nachos that are very good. And everything, we try to make as much of it as we can here ourselves. So it's good, it's decent food. And I suppose we have an ice cream machine here, and the highlight for a lot of kids is making their own ice cream. So we'll help them pull their own ice cream whenever they want as well. You know, we're very aware of all the people that came before us that put an awful lot of hard work in here. So everything that's here, we try to keep it as good as we possibly can. And all the staff that work here, they know that they're representing us and they're representing the family as well as the business. You know, so it is a family business, and that's kind of at the core of in nearly everything we do here is family.
From the cafe, Eleanor directs us to the farm where the tour begins.
So we've just come out the side door of the farm, and only, I don't know, maybe 15 metres down, this is one of, there's another shed. This is one of the original buildings on the farm. So in here, I'll just open this to you. This now is the is another place that gets used for a lot. We do birthday parties here. This building, I should say, is, I think they dated it back to the 1600s. There's an old... concealed, they found when we were putting the roof back on, they found a concealed chimney in there, and they reckoned that that was there was a tax on chimneys, and that was tax evasion 1600 style. But that at night, when all the lights were gone and there was no one around, they took a stone out and let the smoke up through the chimney instead of out the door. So this is a very, 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 very old building. You have a shaky door. On the other side of this room then, because actually this building here was the very original house on the farm. This is where they would have lived, and that would have been typical of the time. So what you notice on the other side of this house, you see these small little windows. So this is where the cattle would always have stayed. I'll open this. Come on in here, but there's loads happening in here as well. So even though the farm is closed, there's still plenty of animals here. So we have a little hedgehog in here, everyone's favourite, Maisie. I'll show you Maisie now. So Maisie's one of my favourites. She's a lovely little face. I know you can't see her, but she's a very friendly little thing, not at all spiky. But we have... So there's loads of rabbits and guinea pigs, and the absolute, without a doubt, most popular animal on the farm is the mice. So the kids absolutely love the pet mice, love them.
On the open farm, visitors can get up close and personal with the animals, even helping to feed them.
You know, we try to get the kids as involved in the farm as possible. So it's a very hands-on experience. So if they're here and we'll say, for example, the guinea pigs need grooming, then we try to get the kids to help out with that. Likewise, the rabbits at feeding time, and even the sheep. So we might go up and feed the sheep, but we'll also say to them, do you know what we need to do now? We need to stand here for a while and watch the sheep and see if any of them are lame, or make sure they all came for food. Is any of them lying down anywhere? Do you know that they kind of learn small things about farming and animals without actually realizing they're learning? Do you know what I mean? And the more involved and the more hands-on they are, the more they just seem to enjoy it. And then this year we added insects because we were just starting to explain to people why some fields might be empty, for example, during the summer. And we'd be explaining to them that the fields need to rest, we need to fertilise them, that there's insects growing on them and living in them. And that's actually then like how we ended up with the insects here, that it was all part of nature and earth and farming, and it's all kind of linked in.
With With each return visit, the children recall the animals they befriended at the open farm.
Over here then, we have, now, normally in here, the bigger animals in here, they've gone out, because just they're better off outside when they can be outside. Well, the hens to be in and out there here all summer as well, though, they'll come in. And there's usually a bale of hay and a bale of straw over there somewhere, and the kids will go rooting, looking for the eggs, because the hens have actually started laying in here. We're different than the usual farms, I suppose, because we'll have chicks later in the year, or the cows will be calving later in the year, so that there's kids around to see it. And Kathleen the cow, who's the cow from our logo, she's named after a friend of mine. she's delighted with herself. She had her calf there, I'd say it was the very end of August. It was one of the last weekends we were open, and sure, there was people here to see it, and the kids were all waiting for the calf to arrive, and they were there when it did. So it's nice for them to see things like that. We don't have a huge turnover of animals here. We keep them all winter, and I suppose you get to know them. So, you know, they all have their odd little characters, and you're able to tell people about them. And then the kids come back year after year looking for particular animals, you know, so they look for Kathleen. Or we had a mouse that just died. Mice only live about 2 years, and we had a three-legged mouse called Stubbletta. The kids loved her. She had one little stub in the front where she was missing a leg. Anyway, we had to get a grave marker for her, basically, because the kids kept coming back looking for her, and the staff were devastated when she passed. You know, it's just amazing how attached people get to the animals, even when they're only meeting them fleetingly. Sometimes they just remember something about them, or they see something that just stays with them.
As Eleanor walks closer to the animal enclosure, she shares details about the animals on the open farm.
Look, do you see Scully over here? Scully, the goat, he's got white fur. The markings on his fur looks like a pirate skull. So that's where he got his name from. But he's the boldest goat now. So when the kids are feeding him, he'll be pucking the others out of their way. Do you know what I mean? But they'll always remember Scully the goat as well. I suppose all of the animals here, we try to give them as much space as we can, so we don't have small enclosures. They're all in big fields, and sometimes it's one of the criticisms that we get is that there mightn't be enough animals here, or but actually I'd prefer them to have more room. But it's a decision we made at the start when we were planning, what do we want the farm to look like? And we want it to look like there is a bit of farming going on with the animals, do you know what I mean? So we want it to look like a farm, but we also want the animals to be healthy and happy. Do you know what I mean? So we have the goat's paddock in front of us, and then there's one big field right in the middle of the farm. And in the summertime, we do a tractor trailer ride as well, right around the farm, but it goes right around this field here. And there's alpacas in it at the minute, and Mischief, the alpaca, you can see them, they're kind of fighting over there in the field. They're having a bit of a disagreement, I'd say, but they'll be all right. We have the alpacas here because they protect the lambs. When the sheep are lambing, the alpacas will keep the fox away. And they do a good job at it. So normally there could be cows in here, and then when they're done, we put in the sheep because they'll eat the grass a little bit lower. And after that, then the donkeys go in because the donkeys would eat all around them. And then in the field just beyond that, you can see Kathleen the cow, actually. You see that red cow up there? And she's a small little calf with her. And then there's a belted Galloway beside her called Oreo. On the other side of that row of ditches, then the pigs are in there. There's seven miniature pigs in there, but the miniature pigs are actually quite big. Yeah. And then we have a playground just on the other side here. And beyond that, we do have a sensory garden as well. Like, the sensory garden isn't just for people with sensory needs. It's all the kids love it.
In addition to the farm activities, Sandyfeet Farm has dedicated play areas for visitors to explore and enjoy.
suppose one of the things they say over and over again is it's safe. Like we said, it goes around in one big circle, so you can pretty much see the whole farm from most of it. Do you know what I mean? You can cast your eye over it, like. And you'll see in the playground again, there's plenty of sand, there's the zip line, and you see that green thing up there? That's a giant waterbed. So that's filled with water. And again, the kids and the parents actually love that one. But again, we've had a lot of inquiries from schools and groups that cater for kids with kind of sensory issues, looking to see where we got it. So even though kids with sensory needs enjoy it, actually everyone enjoys it. And that's the thing about being here, is you kind of, everybody's included. You know that everybody's welcome. I suppose the first year we were here, one of the things I noticed up on the playground was that a lot of the kids just didn't like getting dirty. They just, I don't know, for whatever reason, they just didn't like it. And my own background, I suppose, before I was here, I was a psychiatric nurse for around about 20 years. And I suppose towards the end of that, a lot of the stuff I would have been doing would have been, there would have been mindfulness involved in it. And I suppose that's where the concept for the garden came from then.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The development of a sensory garden on the farm ensures that everyone feels welcome and included.
And I suppose this was added after, the year after we opened, and I think it was actually one of the best things we added to the farm. And the kids will spend hours down here playing in the kitchen and picking the flowers. And so as we come in here, a little gate. Mm-hmm. So as you come in here, you'll see we have a willow tunnel. So this is a living willow tunnel. It greens up every year, has to be woven back in to keep the shape and cut down. And in the middle of the tunnel, there's a little arch that goes out to two willow huts. And when you come out then, we have a water feature here, and on we have a little lavender circular bed here, I suppose. And on either side of that, we have the mud kitchens that have recipes on them. So for things like mud leaf kebabs and mud pies and things like that. And all of the plants here then are edible, so it's mostly herbs, so they can cook with these to pull them. There's a lovely smell off all of them. So we have rosemary and mint and some curry plants, some lavender and sage, and then the trees are apple trees here, and the plants here are robinias. There they attract butterflies and bees and things like that. And when you walk down here, you'll see we have a textured footpath, and these are all the flower beds down here. There's a little wall you can sit on, and a circular stone feature in the middle of it. I knew how valuable things like sensory gardens are for everyone.
On the top of the farm, we are introduced to some of the notable animals they keep.
So this is the top of the farm, see the rabbit over. These are our little piggies. They're not quite little now. We see this one here with the stripe. That's Will and his girlfriend Grace. And these are their babies. But they're miniature pigs, these, and they just love being out. That's Duffy. He was named after the Rose of Tralee, not this year, last year. Her surname was Duffy, and he was born around that time. So we called him Duffy, and that's his mom over there, Maple. And On the other side then, that's Kathleen. You just have to work with what you got. Do you know what I'm saying? So the fields are this size. I think it's the right size for them. The animals have enough food in them. They have enough space. There is an awful lot of work, but it's just worth it.
Eleanor and her family eagerly share tales of the farm's history, often accompanied by a touch of local legend.
There was a little pond here, and we used to have ducks in it. And of course, as soon as we opened, what happened? Dried up. We've got this lovely walkway out into here now, but we told the kids that the crocodiles came up from the beach and frightened all the ducks, and all the ducks moved up to the pond up there now, but that the crocodiles were still here. So we got these little binoculars here, and the kids look into them, and you'd be surprised how many kids will see crocodiles down here. And they'll tell you the colour of them, and they saw their tail or they saw their eyes. And you have to work with what you got. We've got a dried pond here. Do you know, there's plenty of history here. Like, the family's been here for going back generations, for 300 years or more. So there's plenty of stories to be had. And it's something, again, we're hoping to build on. Like, all the fields around here, they'd all have names. See that field in front of us? That was the turf shed field. Down here was the Sandy Garden, you know, and the Coarse Meadow was across the road there. So in time we'll get around to telling the full story of the farm, because there's lots of bits to be pulled out of it, you know. And even in the summertime when it's really busy, if you're walking along here, you can still hear the birds chirping, and you can still hear the waves. And when you're down in the sensory garden there, that is a little bit lower, I think, than the playground. And it's just really peaceful down there, do you know, even when it's busy. So we've got two bar-headed geese here. And we've got, you see these two black ducks here? They're Cayuga ducks. And the other ones are just farmyard ducks, white farmyard ducks. And they're happy out in there. And we're back around to the goats, to Scully the goat.
The farm stands as a tribute to bygone generations, with the desire for future ones to continue the tradition.
I know it sounds kind of corny or something, or a bit, you know, but it kind of means the world to my husband in particular, that he'd often think, I wonder what the old crowd would think now if they could see it now. I think they would think it was mad that people were coming to see animals, because that would have been such a change from years ago. But actually, I think they'd be very proud of it. And you'd be hoping that when our kids grow up, that one of them would show an interest in it. Or maybe all of them, hopefully. But that at least one of them would show an interest in it and want to keep it going.
Yeah, that was the final episode of Fields of Change, Women in Agriculture, and it featured Eleanor Bowler. And we want to wish her the best of luck to her and her family and Sandyfeet Farm in the future. And thanks to all our contributors who made this beautiful series to be involved in, and we want to wish them all the best of luck in the future. We're going to take a break. After that, we'll have our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Now, it is the second Saturday of the month, so it's time for our Kerry County Council Creative Kingdom, where we let you know what's going on in the arts world in this wonderful county of ours. As always, to tell us more, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Kerry County Council Arts Officer Kate Kennelly, and we will be talking to a few special guests very shortly. But Kate, firstly, how are you doing? We're into the summer now. Did you bring in the May? I hope you did.
I wish I had that power, Joe. But all well in the arts world. We always have a quick look back. And last week, I had the pleasure of getting back to Fail na Bealtaine and Dingle. Fantastic opening, and took in some lovely exhibitions. There's, as always, there's such a variety of work back there. Really good artists locally and you know, a great variety across like music, dance, theatre, creative writing, film, the visual arts. So really, really interesting programme, and just well done again to all the committee and the local community, as well as the arts sector, who just put on an amazing festival. As was said to me by someone at national level, at Phil na Bialtana, he said they have it all, and they do. So just to say well done. And since I saw you, Joe, Emma in the Creative Ireland Kerry office had organised a get together for the people who got Creative Communities grant aid from Kerry County Council through Creative Ireland Kerry this year, and we did a really good session. So there's some really interesting projects coming up, and we'll be talking about those as the year progresses. But just again to thank people for giving of their time, because you know this is public money, we are fully accountable for it, and we do like to ensure that the best impact is made. But again, a lot of the people driving these projects, you know, some of them, you know, if they're creatives and artists, they're paid, but some of the community groups, it's voluntary and they give of their time. So just to thank them again for coming in and being part of that session. And yeah, so I'll let you hand over to our festivals coming up, and we'll go through the rest later.
Brilliant. And this is a sample of these wonderful festivals that will be taking place this summer. A very special event festival that always takes place in Killorglin at the June Bank holiday is K-Fest. And I'm delighted to say we have Art Director with K-Fest, Dara Kinch, with us. Dara, you're gearing up to it now. What have people to look forward to this year with K-Fest?
This year it's the 11th year of K-Fest, and we're celebrating in style, as always. It's lined up to be another cracker. So I suppose just over covering the art area, there's 58 artists due to arrive, and the range of artwork is it's really stunning. And the galleries, it's going to be showcased. There's going to be paintings, installations, projections. There's even going to be performance art as well. So that's going to be dotted throughout Killorglin. The other thing to take note of is the art workshops. So there's going to be some pottery, print workshops. There's also going to be a discussion, with Sheila Maloney is her name. And she talks about art sales, pricing your artwork, marketing and all of that. And there's actually going to be a sustainability discussion as well within the art, and that's hosted by IKC3 and NTU. So there's a lot lined up within the art. It's vibrant and very family friendly, so that's covering the art side. Then there is the theatre and spoken word. There's so many different areas, but one to take note of is it's called Dance Hall. The Dance Hall is it's a new show by award-winning performer and theatre maker Jade O'Connor, in collaboration with sound designer and composer Alma Kelleher, also known as Lux Alma. Both of whom actually recently performed in the award-winning show Wake up in Dublin. It's going to be the first showing of this piece, Dance Hall, and it's described by Jade here as the show is built around the idea of experience, and we hope to create an atmosphere or feeling of the dance hall for audiences and what the dance hall gives us, because we are in a time where there are very few places to go to dance. We want to remind ourselves of the importance of bodies in space connecting. It's a show for everyone. So that's supported by the Arts Council, K-Fest and Siam Sa Deira.
A unique thing about the K-Fest is the utilisation of the venues, and the Killorglin, the town itself, is the star. Now, it comes to life because you have pop-up galleries and everything else, but it's really about the venues and the space there in Killorglin as well, isn't it?
It is. It's very unique, K-Fest. It's basically you know, it was born 11 years ago because of the recession. It was taking down and out derelict buildings and giving life giving it a breath of fresh air and bringing creativity to the town. And since then, since 11 years, it's just been growing and growing and growing, and it's getting bigger and bigger and better and better. And it really is still, I suppose, a little bit of a hidden gem. But yeah, it's definitely one to take note of.
Kate, just, you know, the likes of this festival, I think it's more than just the days in itself. It's, you know, it's a holistic approach to a festival. There's a legacy in it, and it's about creating something more than just the actual events as well. It's a fantastic approach.
It is. And Joe, as Dara was saying there, like, this started 11 years ago, and I remember I was actually off in maternity the first year at K-Fest, but I was so excited when I heard about it, and I came back and I couldn't wait to meet the people involved and this great activity and festival they had brought to fruition. And, you know, it was the passion, the driving force, the creative vision of the people involved from the outset. And it was always, as you say, it was just rooted in the community. So it was very much part of Killorglin. And it was Killorglin saying, look, we have a lot more to offer, you know, and we are a very creative place. And, you know, it has kept going. And I know from dealing with the committee and you know, over the years, you know, as people have come and gone, you know, there's always more people, more energy, more vision. So, you know, I remember being a bit concerned when some of the originators were standing down, because I was saying, will it sustain? But it has. And again, it's down to the people involved. And, you know, just to say well done to everyone involved at K-Fest since it started, but in particular the last number of years, because they have been challenging. And with the onset, as you know, of COVID, the challenges that brought, but also in terms of sourcing sponsorship that's outside of public funding, you know, it's become more challenging for everyone. And, you know, festivals need money. You know, there's health and insurance, there's health and safety, there's so many things that need to be covered outside of paying your creatives. But in K-Fest, they attract, you know, you've the younger emerging artists, you also have some really interesting established artists. And I'd have to say with Killorglin, you know, we're so proud of the Pauline Buick collection that is there all year round. And it's such a key part of your experience in Killorglin, you know, to take time out and go in and see it. But as you say, Joe, every building nearly becomes a gallery, or not every building, but as many buildings are available become a gallery during K-Fest. And sometimes the street itself becomes a gallery. And, you know, it's a super approach and just well done. And if people haven't been, you know, please go, because it's a super, super festival.
Yeah, and on that note, Dara, where do people go if they want more information, and remind people when it is on again?
So yeah, it's on. It's always on the June bank holiday. So this year it falls on the 31st of May to the 3rd of June. So Friday the 31st of May to Monday the 3rd of June, the June bank holiday. And yeah, I suppose if you want to find out more information, again, there's so many things that I haven't mentioned: the music side, the family side, and there's so much happening. And a lot of it, 90% of the events are free. So that's very important to kind of take note of, because we're living in a world now that everything costs quite a bit of money. And so, yeah, if you want to check out more information, more details, there's the website, kfestarts.ie. The hashtag for Instagram is kfestarts, and the website is kfest.ie.
Excellent. And yeah, it is a wonderful family event as well. Like you said, you only touched on a bit of it there, the music as well, but go to the website for more information. Dara, we wish you the best luck with it.
Thank you.
And from one great festival to another, Listowel Writers' Week is an institution in this county, and we have Listowel Writers' Week Festival curator Martin Dyer joining us now. Martin, I'd imagine you're in the throes of it now. You're flat out. There is so much that goes into this wonderful event. I know it's a year-round project, but I suppose give us, again, some of the highlights. And is there any scoop for us? Anyone coming that we should know about?
Well, maybe I will give you a scoop. Give us a moment. You're dead right. I'm in the throes of it, myself and all of the team, and indeed the whole community. It's a very special experience, but there's an intensity to it. And the intensity relates to the fact that it is such a big festival. We have over 60 writers coming this year. There's always a great sense of expectation. The standards are very, very high. And there's a sense that the world is watching. Maybe that's just in our heads. But now that the program has been announced, the world seems to be watching indeed, because there's a great deal of commentary and a kind of a fever around tickets. And that's one of the things I'm very keen to mention to you today, to your listeners, just to mention a few events in particular that people would want to be quick out of the blocks in order to get tickets, not to be too disappointed. But certainly it's a privilege. This is my first year as curator of Listowel Writers Week, and I've had a wonderful freedom, and that's part of the privilege, wonderful freedom to read widely, to speculate, to attend events, to try and make friends with writers and publishers and agents, to be able to get the contacts with the people that we've been particularly interested with. Also, we have a theme again this year. Listowel generally has gone that way over the years. A nice structure that the books and the guests and the events and indeed all of the arts that are part of the festival respond in some way to a theme. So Mother Nature is our theme this year. So we're thinking ecologically, thinking environmentally, thinking in terms of climate change, but also more broadly interpreting those words, taking the word mother, thinking about women's experiences, women's experience of conflict, and even the word nature, just a riff on that. Writers who are reflecting on their creative processes, on the idea of a talent, a natural talent, if you will. And of course, Listowel is renowned for the high standards of its writing workshops. And there's great interest in those this year. Off the top of my head, I'll mention the fact that if you like, you can do a songwriting workshop with Bill Whelan of Riverdance fame. But I'll come back. Oh. I'll come back to that. It is a privilege. It's intense. It takes persistence and it takes a great team. So all of that has been, it's kind of tick, tick, tick with regard to those needs. But the other side of it is, well, I suppose when you confirm someone in a program of this kind, you feel lucky, you feel grateful when they say yes, and you have a sense of the work that's gone into that. But actually, one of the strongest and most memorable experiences, I suppose, for me this year has been the fact that the writers want to visit Kerry. They want to come to Listowel. There's an abiding sense of the tradition. In terms of the founders, the likes of John B. Keane, the likes of Brendan Kennelly and Breen McMahon and legends like Morris Walsh, they're in the background in the history of the place, the tradition of the festival itself, the prestige associated with writers who've been there over the years, and then just the sense of Listowel as a town, the heritage town, a beautiful place to visit, a literary town in its own right. And all of that is hugely attractive for people. So you're grateful when people say yes, but you're also aware that in a very special sense and a very dignified sense, people would take your hand off for a slot in the stall. And that's wonderful. It's hugely enjoyable. But I'll say very very quickly, if I was to do a kind of a potted account, we're strong [S2] Yeah. [S1] On very strong on fiction, very strong on poetry, on music. And so I'll come back to those very, very briefly. Strong on a kind of a broader inclusive approach as well. We have a partnership with Festival in a Van, who are going to create a series of performances for audiences who might not necessarily be able to come into the town to the regular venues. We're particularly engaged with care homes and with communities of people with intellectual disabilities. And the wonderful Cork singer Molly O'Mahony and the poet Anne-Marie Curran are performers there. Festival in a Van are extraordinary at doing pop-up concerts with your lights and your bunting and a bespoke experience in unconventional places. Great people to be associated with. We have the National Book Award winning American novelist Alice McDermott coming. We have one of last year's shortlisted Booker Prize novelists, Sarah Bernstein, Colin Barrett, Mike McCormack, the Kerry writer Noel O'Regan, very much on the rise, just shortlisted for the James Tait Memorial Award last month. The renowned broadcaster and novelist Rachel English, Sinead Gleeson, Colin Walsh, Owen de Vardoon, many others. I'll stop there on the fiction front. Very strong on poetry. Our Leaving Cert audience is particularly excited, and secondary schools across the county seem to be particularly engaged by the fact that there's an opportunity to see Elaine Ni Quillen on the Friday night of the festival this year. Very much a titan of Irish poetry. The Cork poet Bernard O'Donoghue is going to read with the British poet Zafir Kunail on the Saturday, and they're going to be with the wonderful young harpist Alana Thornburg.
And Martin, yep. Can you sum it up in about a minute? Because I know there's loads and you won't get to all of it.
Sure,
but
sure.
If you could sum it up.
Absolutely. Well, I would just emphasise the diversity. Friday night, That They May Face the Rising Sun, the film that everybody wants to see. a broad children's programme, again on the eco theme. We have Lily Kingsolver, the daughter of the Pulitzer Prize winning novelist Barbara Kingsolver, coming with her new children's book. We have a fantastic, on the memoir front, Tony Holohan, former CMO, Bill Whelan, and his memoir, The Road to Riverdance, and Claire Wills with her memoir, Missing Persons, which is a profound and moving, I suppose, overview in very personal terms of the heritage of the mother and baby homes, or the history of the mother and baby homes and the legacies. Again, another one to emphasise people to get tickets in advance, not to be disappointed. I could keep going. I'll mention
you could, and it is 30 years, I think, since Riverdance, isn't it?
Yes, it's an anniversary. It's the 30th anniversary since Riverdance. That's right, Joe.
Very good. Well, if people want more information, where do they go?
listowelwritersweek.ie and Listowel and Writers Week on Instagram and on Twitter and Facebook. Yeah, lots there, the posters, the links, tickets on Eventbrite, but writersweek.ie is the one-stop shop.
Very good. And it's starting the Wednesday, isn't it, before the...
Yes, indeed, the opening night, yeah. Wednesday 29th.
Excellent. Well, we wish you the best of luck with it. A fantastic event, such an important event in the calendar in Kerry. Martin Dyer, Festival Curator with Listowel Writers Week. Thanks a million for coming on.
Thank you, Joe.
We're going to take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
You're listening to the Saturday Supplement. It's the second Saturday of the month. Kate Kennelly, Arts Officer with Kerry County Council, is still with us for our Creative Kingdom. And Kate, still lots of events and opportunities out there for people as well coming up.
There are, Joe, and I'll have to try and get through them now. I know we're down to the wire as usual. We're always talking about extending the show, Joe. We're just going to have to do it one of the days.
Leave them wanting more.
This is it. So the Creative Places Ibrahig, which we're involved with a number of partners in South Kerry, as you know, and it's Arts Council funded, with some key partners such as South Kerry Development Partnership, Co Quiste Ibrahig, Kerry County Council and Alian na Gaeltachta. But there is a micro arts fund available now, and it's inviting applications from artists that enjoy making work that has a positive social impact, or that is involved, you know, in a way that allows communities to be an active part of an innovative arts project. And the closing date, Joe, is the 15th of May, and all the details are on the culture section of the ivrahig.ie website. So that's ubhrathaig.ie, ivrahig.ie. Music Network and St. John's Theatre have issued a call out for a musician in residence for applicants. Well, they're actually looking for applications from professional musicians who identify as autistic, or a person with autism who has a strong track record in music performance. And this opportunity, Joe, it recognises that many such musicians face barriers towards their career, really, that others may not. And the deadline for those applications is 12 noon on the 14th of May. And all those details are on stjohnstheatre.ie. And then, to commemorate 50 years since the death of the legendary Guinea Gula fiddle player Dennis the Waver Murphy, the Handed Down series, which you're fully aware of, Joe, we have great work from Handed Down every year, but they're running a series of events from today through to Sunday the 19th of May, and every morning of that week they'll be uploading donated recordings related to Dennis and his music on the Handed Down Sliabh Lucra Archive YouTube channel. So for people involved or interested in traditional music, for musicians who would identify as autistic, and for people down around the Ivra area, there's great opportunities. Then Creative Carsevine, and this is a project that is supported through Creative Ireland Kerry as well. They're doing free felt making wool workshops for adults in Carsevine Library on the 18th of May and on the 25th of May from 10:30 to 12:30, and booking is required. But the classes, workshops, Joe, are free, which is brilliant. And then Kerry Writers Museum have organised some free events to celebrate Beowulfthna, which is all about age and opportunity. And they take place from the 15th of May. Storytelling workshops workshop with Marie Gillen based on collecting local wisdoms, and that will take place from 11 to 1 and also on the 30th and 31st of May. And all details are at the Kerry Writers Museum, 068 22212. And lastly, the Arts Office has already issued the call out, Joe, you'll close your eyes when you hear this, for Culture Night.
Oh,
where did the first few months of the year go? So we've issued a public call out, and we're asking people who are involved in being part of Culture Night, indoor or outdoor events, anytime on Friday the 20th of September, to please come back to us with submissions. Now, the deadline will be open, Joe, until the 4th of June, but the earlier you get it in, the better, really, because, you know, if we have any questions or if you need to tie down some specifics in terms of location or event management, we can help you with all that. So it's Hannah and myself, Kate, in the Arts Office that will be helping out. All events on Culture Night are free to the public, so people need to be aware of that. But we do have a budget, obviously, to support artists, and we'd hope to have a very strong Culture Night again this year in Kerry. It gets harder to outdo it every year, Joe, and we're that way inclined that we want to outdo it every year, do you know?
Yeah, and is it open to community groups and members of the public to put together proposals?
Absolutely. So any artists, creative practitioners, any community groups, any voluntary groups, any person in Kerry who has a thought that they'd like to have something on for Culture Night, and they'd like to present some work in some way that we are showcasing Kerry's living culture, we'd be delighted to engage and talk. So just to contact.
And is there a theme, Kate, or is it just culture in general when you're?
Well, it is culture in general, but it's very much Culture Night. I suppose the national umbrella theme is One Night for All. So the whole concept, Joe, is this night is for everyone, and you don't have to have a background in the arts or be interested in, you know, or maybe, let's say, a stalwart of cultural activity year round, but this night is for everyone. So that's what we want to get across on Culture Night, and we very much want people of all ages to feel, you know, we can go out and enjoy this celebration.
Yeah, and I cut across you there. So if people want to get in contact then in relation to Culture Night, where do they go?
Well, they can email us at it's arts@kerrycoco.ie, or they can call the office 066-718-3541. And the application forms, Joe, are on our Arts Office website, which is arts.kerrycoco.ie. And as ever, we're always excited to see what comes in, because literally every year it's so different, Joe, you know.
Yeah, excellent. And that's where you go as well if you want to subscribe to your newsletter, which I have to recommend. It's a great way to know what's going on, and also listening in to Creative Kingdom, second Saturday of every month with Kate Kennelly. Kate, thanks a million, and we look forward to speaking to you next month.
Thanks, Joe.
That's all we have time for on the programme this morning. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Francis is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry, and I'll be back again next Saturday from 9 a.m. Until then, look after yourself and take care.